old friends, and I didn't even know that I had here. It's been wonderful to be here. You folks are really friendly, and it's a wonderful church, beautiful church. Why didn't you build it big enough? I had to get up before breakfast this morning. I came up from San Diego. But it's wonderful to worship with you. You know, as I drive along the freeway over here, I always look over here and see your beautiful reminder. Amen. Anyone here heard of the Academy of Christian Discipleship? One, two, three. Hey, I got a little story. That's where I met your pastor, by the way. For those of you who were attended the Escondido, is there anybody here who does not know anything about the Academy of Christian Discipleship? Good. Well, give me a chance to explain. We had two classrooms, one in Escondido Academy and one in Paradise Valley Church in National City. I attended the National City Church, and with the marvels of television and cameras and all this, we were hooked together in a way that we were one classroom, and it was marvelous. And your pastor Maxwell and his wife Pat were the instructors of this, and it was to teach laymen like myself how to win souls, basically. And if you'll remember, those of you who attended here, I sat in the back of the room back there with a guy by the name of Bill Nixon. And I just want to take a second to tell you about Bill Nixon. Bill was a high school dropout. He had just gotten out of the hospital with a brain tumor that they took out. He was still alive. But a precious, quiet young fellow that I sat next to for the classes. In a short time, Pastor Maxwell started a revelation seminar down in Chula Vista Church. And he asked different ones of the class to participate and give certain subjects. And he asked Bill to give one of the subjects. Well, as was the custom, Elder Maxwell quit at 10 minutes after 8 every night. I mean, not 11 minutes after. You understand? Because we started out with about 225 people attending non-Adventists, and it dwindled down to about 185, something like that. But it was very successful. But if he went 11 minutes over, they were, you know, giving it the, a shot with a watch, you know, letting him know that they wanted him off the stage. Well, this night, Bill Nixon, this quiet, beautiful guy, was talking on communion service. I mean, it was not one of those dynamite subjects, you understand. But Bill was so good, and he was demonstrating what you do and all this. And he got to about 12, 13 minutes after, and he says, "Oh, folks, I'm so sorry. I'm over the time." And the entire room, with a hue and cry, said, "Go on, go on." And I'm sitting in the back of the auditorium with my wife, and I says, "You see what I see? I mean, the Holy Spirit's with this guy. I mean, here he is, didn't graduate from high school. He's a locksmith, and he had to live with the parents to get by. And so I got a hold of Bill, and I told him, come to my office the next morning. I said, Bill, what are you going to do with your life? He says, I don't know. It's up to the Lord. I says, God's with you. And I saw last night that the Holy Spirit is working with you. Do you want to get more training? Oh, I'd be willing to do anything. So I got on the phone to Black Hills Health and Education Center with Louis Torres. And he was on the airplane first thing the next morning, going back to South Dakota. He goes through their 3-month program, and he gets a call to Dodge Center, Minnesota, as a Bible worker in a church. He works his way up to about 70 or 80 Bible studies while he's there in a year or two. I mean, this is phenomenal. I mean, this is, I don't know how to express it. But the conference in Minnesota hired him to go up to the border near Canada, where I guess they had trouble recruiting for that area, and gave him two churches. Can you believe that? Now, we wonder why things happen the way they do, but you remember Garwin McNeilus went to India with Paulson to have that series over there. I don't know if you read about it in the review and all that, but Bill Nixon was the one who went to give the health lectures of that. So, you know, that's how important this training is. And we don't know who here has been called to do something. I know that I have not been called. And I am an acquaintance with your pastor. I can't say that I'm a friend. But I don't know. I love the guy. He's my prayer partner. We pray every day together. I love him. Your ministerial consultant, Rad Kirkless. I call him a ministerial consultant because he came up to me between the services and he said, you know, the little conclusion that you tagged on to the end of the video at the first service, why don't you do that at the beginning so people will understand what this is all about? Well, I found out from half the people I talked to, you got copies of this video at home anyway. But just relax, you're going to see it again. Over my life, no, I'm no different than anybody sitting here. We all have friends and we have ex-friends. Now, an ex-friend is somebody that's come up and tapped you for money, right? And they have the most horrendous story you'd ever want to hear. It is so grievous and heart-wrenching that you reach for your checkbook and take care of the problem. And then you never hear from them again. Now, in the course of my life, I've had many, but there's four outstanding ones. I'm not going to review them with you today, but I will say this, that after seeing the pineapple field, I decided to make a deal with the Lord. Lord, I'm going to kiss off the money. It's gone anyway. It's going to be yours. I'm going to turn this pineapple field over to you. And I got to just share this with you. In the midst of all this fray, I run into one of my son's buddies who's a lawyer. And he was at the house having lunch or something. And I says, hey, look, I got something for you to do. I know that you have a ministry over in Russia where you're helping young people over there. And you need funds for it, right? I said, I've got a place for the funds. He says, all you got to do is go collect it. So he says, I don't like to do that. I says, fine. So my prayer partner and I have been praying every day for about a month and a half. Every day. We lift these guys up. Last Thursday, day before yesterday, this lawyer calls and says, hey, I don't know why, but I called the guy, and he's going to pay up May the 10th. That's one of the guys. Is that working? So that's my story, and I know everybody sitting here has got junk like that. Well, turn it over. Let's turn over our pineapple fields to the Lord. So without further ado, we'll get right into the video. Thank you.
as you possibly some of you have heard, the pineapple story took place in the country of New Guinea. It used to be Dutch New Guinea. Irian Jaya now, part of Indonesia. Right here in these swamplands is where we had planted these pineapples. I tried to grow everything there, but nothing would grow. The ground, the sandy soil was so bad. And so I finally tried pineapples because I didn't know what else to try. God had put me there, my wife and I, among people who were just chronic thieves. They stole everything. One day, one lady stood there and she had her necklace on the bottom of her necklace hung our only can opener. And we were so glad to get that thing back. You know, we were hacking cans open with machetes and it was a mess. My wife, being a nurse, she sterilized that thing good and we got it back. One day she said to me, "Otto, I can't find the diaper pins to keep the diapers on the babies and the large slide pins." And one day there stood a group of women and on their ears hung our diaper pins. And we were so glad to get them back because, you know, what else do you do? The other day I heard of a rock group here in America which used safety pins on their ears. So I guess we're catching up with the jungle people here in America. I suppose in music, some other areas, we're already ahead of them, if that's possible. But, you know, they stole everything. And God sent me among those people, probably the greatest thieves on earth, to teach me the lesson that he wanted me to get, the lesson of Luke 14:33, where it says, "Whosoever he be of you that forsakes not all that he has, he cannot be my disciple." Now, I'm Dutch by birth. I was born in Holland. And us Dutch people hang on awfully tight to things we have. That's the way. It isn't my fault, really. My father was that way. I got it from him. And then I found out that he got it from my grandfather, so it really isn't his fault either. But, you know, they call us stingy. You know, the word in their culture here was long-nosed. The word for stingy. The long-nosed white man, they called me. And a stingy missionary. And I was fighting for all that I had. I mean, I was taught, you know, to fight back. I fought for everything, like they stole my shirt. One guy, he's trying to sell me a fish. He had my shirt on. You think the guy would wear it somewhere else. I said, "You know, nobody else is wearing any shirts around there." And I said, "Hey, man, give me your shirt back first, and then I'll trade with you." They took everything. One time, one guy came staggering, and he couldn't see straight. And then I realized that he's got my wife's subscription sunglasses on. She hadn't missed him yet. Oh, it was crazy. He's staggering in like this. He doesn't know how to walk. He has no clothing, just glasses. And he's staggering in, and I took them off his nose. I said, "Now you'll be able to walk home." And, you know, they took everything. I'd go to the village with my box. I had a cardboard box. And when I went to visit them and to learn language and so on, I just gathered up the stuff I found in their homes, you know, got it all back. They called me the missionary with the box. I didn't like that, but I'd fill the whole thing up. I found stuff I hadn't missed yet. They'd say, I sat looking at this flashlight and I saw, "That's just like the one I got." Amazing that these people would have one like that. Then I went home and found that they'd just gotten it the day before. They were chronic thieves. They'd get my wife's attention at the front door and knock, and then they'd clean off the wash line at the back. There was no way. There were so many of them, just the two of us. And we were fussing with them, and they said, "Tuan, you're always angry." I said, "Hey, I was never angry until I met you people." This is true. Anger had never really been my problem. I'd had other problems, but anger was never my problem until I met them. I said to them, "Hey, I could be a real good missionary if it wasn't for you people, you know." Well, I heard a pastor say that here at home too. So you must, you know, I could be a good preacher, pastor, if it wasn't for my people. A teenager told me once, "I could pass my grades if it wasn't for my teacher." And then I suppose the man that said, "I could be a good husband if it wasn't for my wife." So you have natives around you too. So really, I think you'll be able to understand my story. But they stole all my pineapples, and I didn't know what to do. I closed the clinic. I said, "No more clinic. They said, you're going to eat all the pills yourself? I said, no. I said, but if you... you're going to have to make a choice. You either get pineapples or you get pills. If you keep stealing them, you won't get pills. Make a choice. And they kept right on stealing. They were chronic. They couldn't stop stealing. And so they, I closed the clinic and they all went off to their, well, no, they sat on my front porch with their headaches, you know, rubbing their tongue, give me some pills. And I said, hey, don't sit here hurting. Go sit on your own front porch, hurt there. That's where you eat the pineapples. That's where your head is going to hurt. And, they weren't happy with me. But by the weekend, they let their babies die. Can you believe it? Blamed us, the stingy white men, the long-nosed white man, won't give us any medicine. And this grieved our hearts, of course. And we quick opened the clinic again and thought, well, let's forget about the pineapples. Let them have it. I have the pineapples. We'll live, you know, and save their lives. And so we endeavored to do this. And 2 or 3 weeks went by, and it was time to weed the garden again. They said, Tuan, your garden needs weed. Let me weed it all, you know. And I said, hey, if you're going to eat all the pineapples, weed it yourself. You know. But they finally, I paid them to weed it, and I thought, I'll try something else. I'd grown these things. They took 3 years before they ever produced fruit. And now they'd been producing fruit for a couple of months, and they stole them all. And, I was angry. And, you know, I didn't even know what it tasted like. And I wondered what they taste like. And people say, why didn't you beat them to them? And, well, they ate them while they were still green. They ate everything green. They never even knew bananas turned yellow. They ate everything green. They were in a society of chronic thieves. You couldn't survive there unless you knew how to steal. The women would come to our house and would train their children how to steal, always using my pineapple garden as training grounds. They'd say, now check the windows, now get mommy that big one, so on and all that. And those women. I told them, I said, you know, quit training. They'd beat the kids if they got caught. No wonder they grow up the way they do. And so we opened a clinic again, and I thought, I've got to think of something else. I've got to get some of these pineapples, and we can't have these people walk all over us. And so I closed the trade store. I thought, they can do without the salt and the fish hooks and stuff like that, matches. They'd never had matches till we got there. And I closed the store. I told them a week ahead, and they kept stealing, so I closed it all. Now they reacted. They were angry at me. They said, that stingy white man, if he doesn't share, no advantage living near him. And so they moved out. They moved to their favorite hunting grounds further towards the ocean this way. And we were left there with a grand vacation. Can you imagine how neat that was? They look in every window every moment of the day. Oh, friends, it gets to you after a while. There's no way we go on a picnic, they follow us. You know, they watch us eat. They tell us when we've eaten enough. And then they want the rest. We could only get out of there and go visit our children that were in school up here on the coast. We'd get out maybe twice, three times a year. But the rest of the time, we were locked in. They were watching everything we did. Now they'd gone through the jungle. Oh, was that neat. I got all my letters written. I got all my reports in. Everybody thought I was a good missionary now. No people. And I have nothing more to do. And a plane comes, and we're dragging the rice sacks to the house. And he says, where's your coolies? I said, they've gone to the jungle. And he says, I hope they come back. Well, I was still enjoying the vacation after 3 weeks. But 3 more weeks, oh, the boredom, the monotony in a jungle. Can you imagine sitting on a jungle island with nothing to do? No radio, no TV, no books to read, nothing. Just eating pineapples. But, oh, that was good. But you get tired of them, you know. And I'm getting convicted, you know. If only the home church is supporting me, knew all I was doing here was eating pineapples. I could do this back in the States. And my conscience bothers me because they send out the monthly checks to our support and so on. Finally, the plane came back again. Well, the grass was too tall, and you should have seen the lines he left in the grass as he landed on that grass airstrip. I knew I was in for it. I was in trouble. He got out of his plane, just shook his head. He says, Koning, you know better than this. He says, get your people to cut this. He says, where's your people anyway? He should have remembered. I told him before. And I said, they've gone to jail. He says, well, send somebody to call them back. Well, my wife wouldn't go. Hey. And you can't blame her, folks. Those spiders and those snakes in those jungles and those mud trails with slippery logs and leeches and what have you. She didn't know where they were anyway. He says, hey, I can't come back till you get that grass cut. I'll call you. We had a two-way radio with contact with the MAF base a little north of us and with our mission headquarters. And, hey, he says, I can't come back. I'll call you ahead of time. How would you like to be a missionary back there in the jungle and the pilot that comes your way isn't going to come back? And you say, oh, God, I need my natives. I need my people. I need a messenger. And one guy came, stood there smiling, and I said, hey, get that smile off your face. I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you a job. You call all the people, and I'll pay you good. And he smiled again and went off, and I said, thank you, Lord, you gave me a messenger. And we waited it out in 3-4 more days. There they were, and they're yelling at me. I said, Tuon, we're here, Tuon, we're here. Well, hey, they didn't have to tell me. We could smell them. You know, they never bathe. Can you imagine it? Never bathe. They can never sneak up on you. And I thought they'll probably steal my pineapples again. They did. And now I tasted them, and now it's even worse. That's when you complain, when you've had it good, and now you have to cut back. And I was fussing, and they said, Tuon, you're always angry. You're an angry white man. And that bothered me. You're stingy. And I said, no, I'm not. Leave him alone. I'll show you I'm all right. But I tried everything. Finally, I got this German shepherd dog. He was a big, full-grown male shepherd. I got him up here in the mountains of New Guinea. A missionary raised him. And oh, the day when that dog was on the plane, they could only see the pilot as he landed. He was in the tail end. All the people, like usual, crowded around that airplane to see what was in there, to see what they would steal next. And the pilot would, he couldn't get a door open, you know. He said, can't you control your people? Get them to stand back there. And I'd have a stick, you know, and tap them on the shoulder. Hey, get back. But, you know, you don't hit them too hard. They've got 9-foot spears, right? And they're headhunters and cannibals, so you go easy. I'd back this side off, and they'd be dust, and all those flies would get inside his cockpit, and he'd be fighting flies all the way home. And he says, get your people away. Oh, there's another reason. He would polish up that plane. Our people never use a handkerchief and get their noses against his glass. And, he says, look at the mess they're making. Can't you? Oh, he was fussing at me. And I'd be fussing at the people, so we're both fussing at him. But this morning when that shepherd dog was in there, I almost encouraged him to get closer. I thought you should have been there. You should have been there. When he opened that tail door of the plane, that full-grown shepherd jumped out, let out one bark. You should have seen him run. That was my best day of my missionary career. They ran, and the dog, you know, they were up on my roof, up in the coconut trees. They were everywhere, and it was unreal. And the dog did his job. No more pineapples were stolen. I thought, I've got it. You know, I've beat him finally. But alas, I didn't. It got worse. You see, the dog ruined our ministry. Nobody came loitering around our mission station anymore. My wife had a clinic 200 feet away. And she says, Otto, get rid of the dog. I said, why? She says, come over to the clinic. Well, it was true. All those 100 people, an average of 100 people, would crowd in on her. Nobody wanted to be on the outside when the dog got loose. They'd yell, and I'd tie up my dog with this vine, but he could chew himself free in 20, 30 minutes. And one day, you know, they would yell at my wife, quick, quick, me first, quick, quick, quick. Look, he's chewing the vine. He's going to come. And they're all pressing up on me. I can't even, haven't got elbow room. I can't work with them. She says, they're driving me up the wall. I'm going to be a nervous breakdown. I can't carry on like this. Well, she says, I'm bending all the needles on them. They're so tense by the time they get. And so she was right. One day I saw the dog get loose. You won't believe this. Tore off with a piece of vine hanging on his neck. Tore off towards the clinic. And all of a sudden, those sick people weren't sick anymore. They'd bring him in on stretchers and they run home. Now, can you believe that? The ground is filled with crutches. Hey, the guy that couldn't even sit up is sitting on the roof of the clinic. Now, how do you... My wife says, well, I guess I'm all done for today. I said, yes. But, you know, she was right. I ruined my ministry, too. I used to sit on my step and learn the culture and the language, but now no more loitering around there. So I realized that I had to get rid of the dog, and I finally did. And they clapped, they cheered. That's the best thing you've done since you came. And I thought, what do I do next? I tried everything. I fussed with them. I did everything trying to get that garden, those pineapples. And finally, I drove a stake in the garden. And they said, what is that doing? And all of them were there. And I said, this is a marker. All the pineapples on this side are yours. All the pineapples on this side, they're mine. You leave them alone. They said, Tuan, you're giving half of your garden away? I said, yeah. Now, that must be a record for a Dutch person, right? 50%. Hey, I was losing it anyway, so really, if you're losing it anyway, you might as well give it away, isn't that right? And they stole both halves anyway, you know. As a matter of fact, it was even worse now. I see a guy on my side of the garden, and I say, I'd yell at him, and he'd jump over the line and stand there laugh at me, you know, with my pineapple. Oh, that got me. I had promised God I'd never get angry again. Have you ever done that? I said, God, I it's not right. I'm a missionary. And how can I win these people if I'm angry? And I get convicted many a time. And I promised God never get angry again. And then a guy come to my store with a pineapple. Tuan, you want to buy this? Look how nice and big it is. And I'd lost it again. I had to confess my sin again. And then I walk in my garden with my wife. I see a nice one in the corner of the garden. I covered it with grass. Nice one coming up. I thought in 2 weeks it'll be ripe. I'm going to get one. And I'd hide it. But somehow they always found it. I'd come back and lifted up the grass and a pineapple was gone. I'd throw that grass down. I thought, there's rascals. They're getting them all. And I'd lose it again. And I'd have to confess that I was angry again. This went on and on. How many times does God forgive us anyway? I'm so glad that it isn't 70 times 7. I figured out once, that's about a year and a third. You know? Boy, if he stopped, then many of us be in trouble. And God keeps forgiving when I keep confessing. That's 1 John 1:9. You believe that, don't you? If I confess, he forgives. And I'm so glad that's in the Bible. I was camping on that verse. You know, I struggled on. What do I do? I tried everything. And finally, I found out that the guys who were stealing them were the guys that had planted them. And you know what they said? My hands planted them. My mouth eats them. They're mine. I said, no, they're mine. Can you see us standing in the garden? He's yelling at me. They're mine. And I'm saying, hey, I said, look, I bought this garden from the chief. I bought these pineapple plants from a missionary. I paid the pilot to bring them here. What are you talking about? They're yours. Oh, he says, Tuan, that's true. The garden is yours and the plants are yours, but the fruit is mine. I said, what's your fruit doing on my plants? He says, doesn't matter where it is. I said, come on. And I told the chief that I bought the piece of ground from him. He says, yeah, too, and that's their pineapples. I said, well, and you know what their culture, they said, whatever you plant, that's what you eat. No matter whose plant it is or where it is. So their hands planted them. They said, you didn't get your hands dirty. And so the whole village agreed. And they said, we always wondered why you're angry over something you don't own. Do you ever do that? Really, isn't everything we own God's anyway? And if we fuss and stew over it, we're just wasting our time, really. And finally, I said, well, after about 2 weeks, I said, transplant them into your own gardens. I thought, I'm going to start all over again. I dreaded the thought, 3 more years. Can you imagine this? 3 more years to start all over again. And I said, you men come back tomorrow and I'll take all the plants and plant them in your own gardens. They said, will you pay us, Tuan? I said, no, I'm giving them to you. And they said, Tuan, that's going to be sweating, you know, you got to pay for that. So can you imagine that I paid those rascals to take my plants out of the garden? And I lost a lot of sleep over this garden. I shouldn't have, but I did. And while I didn't pay them enough, I guess they dropped them along the airstrip. They wanted months' pay for planting new gardens and preparing new gardens. And so nobody got the pineapples. They didn't get them. I didn't get them. But I'm going to start all over again. I got a new load, and I told them they're going to plant them, and I'm going to pay them this extra beautiful machetes. And I said, now you forfeit your right to own them. They're mine. I'm going to eat them. Your hand's going to use this machete. And so they all of a sudden all wanted to plant them. And a year goes by, and I said, do you still have those machetes? I said, don't lose them. If they lost the machetes, I'd lose my garden. It was a very shaky, risky thing. I didn't have pineapples to worry about now. Now I worried about their machetes. They said, get locks on your doors. Well, they didn't even have doors yet. You know, and but I was so glad to get out of there. I was going on furlough. And, I promised my wife I'd never come back and she'd promise me the same thing. And we'd hoped, we told God we'd go anywhere but to those thieves. And, you know, have you ever said to God, I'll go anywhere but there? You know, what does God say? You know, he'll hold you right to it. Don't say it. Don't say it. Because he'll say, he wants to make the choices in our lives, you see. And it was soon after that that I attended the seminar right here in Chicago at McCormick Place, the basic seminar. I was sitting up in the balcony, and that second night, Bill talked a whole night on right. Now, that could be that's a long night on fighting for your rights, because all I could think of was that crazy garden back there halfway around the world, way there above Australia. And the longer he talked, the more miserable I got. He said, give your possessions to God. God takes good care of his property. And I thought, oh, I never thought of that. And then he said, whatever you give to God with the right motives, you'll never lack in that thing. And that's so true, and it's so scriptural, because if you give it to God, he's in control. And he, whatever he's Lord of, whatever he controls, he does a better job than we can. And I've proved that. I can't get away from pineapples now. Everywhere I go, people actually think I like them. Everywhere, you know, whatever you give to God, you'll never lack. This is very, very true. But he went on. He said, the people you fight with, you'll never be able to win for Christ. Oh, that grieved me. I thought, that's right. Here, people have died on that mission field, and I was their missionary, and they're lost forever in a Christless eternity in hell. And they're lost, and I was their missionary. All I was doing was fighting for pineapples while they were going into eternity. And oh, I was so grieved. I didn't think God would ever forgive me, but he did. He'll forgive you no matter what you do. Isn't that true? And I sat there, I was grieved, and I was weeping up there in the balcony. Bill didn't know I was there. And others wondered what this guy was weeping over. And he said something else. If you keep fighting for your rights, you'll destroy your own health. And I'd done it. My nerves were bad. I was on tranquilizers. Missionaries shouldn't be on tranquilizers now, should they? And I was on them, and my health was bad, and I was hurting. And he says, you'll destroy your health. And I said, God, I've already done it. And when he gave the invitation, how many need to put something on the altar tonight and give it to God? Boy, I think I raised both of my hands. I said, God, it's your pineapple garden. You do whatever you want with it. And the peace of God filled my soul. And I walked out of that seminar as if I had a burden lifted that, you know, my shoulders were never broad enough to carry. A load. And I said, God, I never have to angry again. I never have to fuss and fight again. Oh, what relief, what freedom. It's like getting born again all over again. I got back to the jungle and stood there in the garden one night. I said, God, this is your garden. If you want to give these pineapples to these natives, that's up to you. If you want to give them to your faithful missionary, I would sure appreciate it. Now, why do you laugh? I know what you're saying. You didn't deserve any. I know. I confess that. I said, God, I'm not a very victorious missionary. I don't know what I'm doing here, why you ever sent me here. But I did say to him, God, I'm your child, and I feed my children, and you've got all kinds of good food coming up here in this garden. No, now that's really putting the pressure on God. I hope you've never done that. I'm ashamed of that now. That's like twisting God's arm. God, my kids aren't always good, but I feed them. But friends, I saw God grow pineapples on that same poor soil, sandy place, same gardener, same climate, everything the same. And his were bigger and taller than mine ever were. And God sure knows how to grow pineapples better than I can. And I'm getting suspicious as I go around telling a story. God can grow anything better than we can. We give him a chance. But he isn't going to push us out of the way. If we're willing to let him do it, fine. But if not, then he's going to let us struggle. And I reminded God how bad those people were, how the women danced with the bloody heads that the men took in headhunting, put them under their arms, and I described how wicked they were. That made me look pretty good. And I thought God certainly would want to give all his pineapples to his missionary rather than to those rascals. And, you know, but I'm still wondering. God started to grow his pineapples. We walking in the garden. The natives were looking at the pineapples. I prayed. I said, God, the natives are looking at your pineapples. Well, I was looking at them too. You know, we're all everybody's looking at him. Who's going to eat those nice big ones? And I reminded him over and over again that I was a full-time missionary. I wasn't just short-termer. I was in this for life. And, you know, all this. And then the natives were really starting to look harder. And I caught it. And I said, God, these guys steal them before they get ripe. If you want to get any of your pineapples, you're going to have to watch over this garden now, because they're looking at them. They're about ready to steal. They don't wait till they get ripe. See, I'm giving God some good advice. I've got experience. I'm helping him. I'm on his side, okay? I hate to see God lose his pineapples, wouldn't you? I hate to see God get hurt. So I'm really helping him out, and I'm advising him every day. And when they start, can you believe that they stole all God's big ones? I never got a one that whole year. As they got ripe, they stole them. I didn't think it was fair. I couldn't believe it. They stole them all. And I prayed about it. And I was angry at those people for it because, you know, now that they were stealing them, I yelled louder at them. And I got angry because I was doing this for God. I told the Lord, I'm getting angry for you. I'm on your side. I'm not stealing your pineapples, God. They're stealing them. I told God that, just in case he didn't know. And I'm angry. No, I'd given the garden to God at the seminar. And here I'm still wearing myself out. And I came to the place, friends, where if you're angry long enough, you'll destroy your health. And that's what I did. My nerves were bad and my health was bad. And finally I said, God, I fell on my knees before him one time and I said, God, I can't help you any longer. I haven't got the strength. I haven't got any fight left. You're going to have to look after your own garden. If you don't, nobody else will. And I've literally, you know what God showed me that morning? Romans 6, dying to self, reckoning myself dead to sin. And God showed me that I should give up my right to own a garden. Well, I was at the end of my health, at the end of my rope, so I gave the garden to God one more time. I said, God, I die to the right to own a garden. And I die to the right to eat pineapples. And I endeavor to live that way. And again, as I got up from my knees that morning on that mission field, the peace of God came over me again. I never need to get angry anymore. I die to the right. I said, God, I'll never walk in that garden again. I'll never even look at it. Now, I shouldn't have said that. The garden was right outside my window. And for a while, I couldn't stop getting angry. Hey, I'd been doing this for 7 years, you know. And I'd see the thieves in my garden, you know. And I'd used to yell at them, hey, what are you doing in my garden? They'd say, just looking, Tuan, just looking. I'd say, well, do your looking somewhere else. You know, but now that I'd given the garden away, oh, I still sometimes get angry at him. I forget, you know. And then God convicts me, and then I say, oh, God, forgive me. Once, right in the middle of getting angry, God got to me, and I said, okay, go ahead. Steal the pineapples, that's fine. And I shouldn't have told him to steal them, but that's the way it came out. And can you believe that God brought me to a place where I waved at the thieves stealing the pineapples, and they said, he's gone blind. I was taking his pineapple. His eyes are bad. And I said, no, I saw you, man. I just didn't say anything. But now God dealt with me on that, too. I said, hey, if you're dead to that thing, you don't worry about what they say. And so when they stole, I turned my back. And for a while there, I said to the Lord, I said, God, look this way. You catch him right in your garden. And I don't think God was even looking, see? And God dealt with me on the whole thing. Finally, I died to this thing. And I'm not fighting anymore. And this is when this group of natives stood there. Haimo, a very intelligent fellow, said, Tuan, you've become a Christian, haven't you? And, that's devastating. I said, why do you say that, man? He said, you don't get angry anymore when they steal your pineapples. I said, does that make me... He says, yeah, Tuan, you're a Christian now. I thought, what about all the other good things I've done here? I've knocked myself out for these people trying to help them. Doesn't that count? No, they only remember when you blow it. You ever notice it? Your neighbors expect you to be totally perfect, right? Now, how can you be a witness? Well, listen to the rest of the story. See what happens. I wondered, now, how does he know what a Christian was? Then I thought of it. For seven, almost 8 years now, I preached about Christianity. I preached how Christ, what he's like, how a Christian lives, how he acts, how he reacts. And they always said, Tuan, whenever you said that, we hoped we'd meet one someday. You see? Now that's the difference between our walk and our talk, right? I'm preaching at them, but they're watching me get angry, and my message is nullified. And so here he stands. He says, Tuonda, why don't you get angry anymore? I said, I don't need to get angry anymore. I gave the garden away. Oh, you should have given it to me, he said. I asked him some questions, and then he said, Tuonda, who owns the garden now? I said, I'll tell you tomorrow. Friends, I felt so bad at this point because they just said, you know, you've become a Christian. I thought, I've blown it so bad. I should move to another tribe. I don't know what to do. There's 150 tribes in the yellow side of the island on Irian Jaya alone that are without missionaries that have not heard the gospel yet. Can you believe it? And there are many more on this side too. And I should go to another tribe, but a missionary wouldn't fly me anywhere else, a missionary pilot. He said, why do you want to go? I said, I've messed this up so bad, I want to start all over again. He says, why don't you do it? I didn't want to tell him. Didn't want to tell anybody. I hadn't told my wife. You know, I said, they just said, you've become a Christian. He sat there laughing at me. He said, tell you what to do. Show them the difference, and you'll win them. You know, I thought about it. But I remember that night, I went in the house. It was nighttime. And Haimo says, Tuon, who owns him now? One more question, Tuon, before you go in there, go to sleep. Who owns him now? I said, hey, I'll tell you tomorrow. I'm not going to talk anymore. It's late. I'm tired. Come back tomorrow. We talk every day anyway. So I looked through a crack in the curtain, and he stood there and pointed at his people. They point with their chin. He said, did he give him to you? 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 And he's do you own him? And he says, one more question, Tuon. I can't find the owner. Who owns him now? I said, I'll tell you tomorrow. Go home. And they rounded the corner of my house. You know what they said to each other? They said, how can we steal if we don't know who owns them? You know, it was a difficult night for the hungry thieves. And can you imagine the agony of a hungry thief when he can't, you know, the biggest headhunter might own him, the witch doctor might own him. So all that night, I couldn't sleep, folks. My conscience was, I was awake. I've just become a Christian. I felt so bad. I was awake. I said, oh, God, I'm starting all over again. I thought I was starting over at the seminar, you know, 2 years ago. And then, you know, when I gave you control of the garden, I thought I was starting. Now I'm starting. How many times do I have to start over? And I felt so bad. But you know the amazing thing? As I lay on my mattress that night, I heard commotion in the village. Everybody was awake. Those guys were at God. They woke up everybody trying to find the owner of the garden. Desperate, hungry thieves. And I thought, you know, this is neat. Finally, they're all losing a night's sleep over this garden. And I just, it made me feel so good. They went with torches through the next village. Can you believe this? At night, snakes and all. They went through and woke up the next village trying to find the owner. Never did find him. And early in the morning, I must have fallen asleep because they woke us up. And they were all around our house. And I woke my wife up and I knew what this was all about, but she didn't. And she's afraid, and she says, what is it, Otto, what is it? I said, calm down, Carol, just calm down. No problem at all. I know what this is all about. You'll enjoy this. You join me outside, and you'll enjoy this one. Well, now, she had never, my wife is a night person, you know, and she'd never seen the sunrise yet in New Guinea. And I'd often say, you've got to see the sunrise. And she says, ah, she's smart. That's just a sunset backwards, she'd say. Once she said, God wanted me to see the sunrise. He'd schedule it later on in the day. But you know, it was beautiful. It was really beautiful. That morning, my wife saw the sunrise. It was neat. Curiosity got her. And there stood all those natives with their hands across their chest like this in the dampness of the early morning. All of them were there. And I said, good morning, men. What do you want? One shout. Who owns the pineapples? I said, I gave them to my God up in heaven. And they start to rub their nose. That's how they think. You know, it's neat. You can't laugh at them. When you see the whole 300 of them real thinking real hard, you know, they rub their nose. it's neat when you're preaching, you know. You at least know when your audience is thinking. It sometimes gets to be a real mess, you know, when they never blow their nose, But anyway, you know, we think scratching. I used to think scratching my head, you know. And they'd say, Tuon, you got those bugs too? Miserable, aren't they? You know. But they stand there. You know, you can't laugh. We're pinching each other, standing there with a straight face. You know, you can't make fun of them. And so they think, Tuon, doesn't your God have any pineapples up there in heaven? I said, I don't know. Gave them anyway. And they thought some more. And one guy says, Tuon, how many moons ago did you give your garden to your God? And I thought a little while, and I said, Oh, we learned to think like that too, you know. Matter of fact, I was in our mission candidate school, and way up there on the top row, as I was saying this, a guy let out this loud sneeze, and somebody else shouted, "He blew his mind." And so, I guess you can blow your mind in more than one way. But anyway, here they're standing there thinking. They said, I thought, well, I said, oh, maybe, I said, 5-6 moons ago. And then the strangest thing happened. There started a commotion start, and they started to talk, and they started to get louder, and they got excited, and they got angry. And I heard snatches of it, and they said, Tuan, get in there, go in your house, and get on your knees, tell your God you want the garden back. I said, oh, I don't want the garden back. I've been so happy not owning it. Have you ever been happy not owning something? Oh, I can sleep again now. My worries are gone. My anger is gone. My health is improving. My nervous system is improving. Hey, I'm so happy not to own it. And don't envy the rich man. He's got more worries than you'll ever have. But friends, I said, no, I don't want. We want you to own the garden. I said, why? He says, you're the cause of all the problem. You tell your God you made a mistake, because you did. You tell him you made a mistake and get it back. I said, I didn't make a mistake. I feel it's the best thing I've ever done. They said, oh, Tuan, but you did make a mistake. I said, why are you saying this? Well, why are you? You're the cause of all the problems. They'd had powwows. They'd had talks. They'd offered witchcraft to the demons. You know why? Because nothing was going right in the village. After I gave my garden to God, everything started to go wrong for them, because they were touching God's pineapples, and He can take good care of them. The rain wouldn't fall. The gardens wouldn't grow. They let the fish hook in the river. Nothing would come up. They'd hunt, and they'd never get any pork. We hadn't gotten pork for months. They said, our women aren't getting pregnant. There's no babies being born. We're going to be outnumbered by the enemy tribes. They said, everything is wrong to them. They'd been making sacrifices to the demons. They've been having talks. Who has wronged them? Who has turned them off? What is wrong? They couldn't find a problem. And all of a sudden, they stand in front of my house. And they said, missionary, it's you. It's you. You're the cause of the trouble. Get in there and get the garden back. And I said, I don't want the garden back. Well, we want you to own the garden. We never gave you permission to give it to your God. He is not to own any property around here. And I said, hey, why don't you quit stealing his pineapples? Ah, Tuan, you're so dumb, that won't work. I said, why not? They said, well, you know what it was? They're chronic thieves. They couldn't stop stealing any more than some of us here can stop worrying. And we should be able to stop, because we have the way of escape, right? 1 Corinthians 10:13, when you're tempted, you resist Satan, right? Resist the devil, he'll flee from you. We should be able to overcome our chronic besetting sins. They could not, because they were deceived. They were controlled by Satan. They had never faced temptation and not yielded. And they said, you know, when they get near the garden, they smell the pineapples. You know, Satan make them feel hungry, right? He does that to some of us too. We get near the fridge and we get hungry. But Satan controlled them totally, you see. And they said, Tuan, that won't work. You get the garden back. Oh, I didn't know what to do. I said, I don't want to own a garden. Oh, they come at me. They got all the spears, you know. Now, at this point, they're showing me the spears, all the heads of the spears with the ugly ostrich bird claws on the top, sharp. You see them all start to move. They start pulling the bows back to see if they still work, you know. They start playing with the bowstrings, boing, 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 you know, yeah, till you hear it. You know, you really get the point, don't you? You don't want to get the point. And they're getting angry. Tuan, get in there. Pray. And my wife says to me, I thought you said this was going to be funny. It wasn't funny anymore. I did some quick praying, and God gave me a name, Haimo. That's very sharp native. I said, Haimo, where are you? I want to talk to you. And Haimo comes out of the crowd. And he stood there and laughs at me. I said, Haimo, why are you laughing? He says, Tuan, you can't be a Christian and own the garden at the same time. And I said, Haimo, you're right. Now, what was he saying? This verse that had troubled me, unless you forsake all that you have, you can't be my disciple. Discipleship means lordship. You can be born again and fight for your rights. But you can't be his disciple, because if you're his disciple, then he's your Lord, then he's Lord of all. And only lordship, and he's your Lord, that's a Christianity that witnesses to others. That's a Christianity that shows the others. See, and they say, you can't be a Christian and own a garden. You'll be an angry white man again. And I said, Haim, will you tell them? And they were getting angry. And you know what they said at this point? They said, Tuan, we gave you the privilege of living with us. Oh, brother. You know, they thought I'd gone all over the world and found the nicest people anywhere and live with. That's what they thought that. I said, Haimo, you try to talk to him. And I step out of the way, you know. And he, and they're looking at him. He says, quiet, all you people. He says, hasn't this Tuan been a nice Tuan to live with since he's become a Christian? But if we make him take the garden back again, he'll be an angry white man again, a miserable fella. Why don't we let him own the garden? And they said, Haimo, you're crazy. If he owns the garden, if his God owns the garden, well, then we'll die. Haimo, you're going to starve too. And they're all getting angry at him now. He says, hey, just a minute. He says, look, if you can't leave those pineapples alone, walk the other path. You can get to the river the other way. You don't have to go by his house here. You know what he was saying, the equivalent he was saying? Like we say, if you've got a problem with alcohol, don't go by the tavern. That's what he's saying. He says, you won't smell them. You won't even know they're there. Let his God own him. Then he can be a Christian. I said to Haimo, I said, I really want to be a Christian, Haimo. I've so enjoyed being a Christian. Let me be a Christian. And he says, he really wants to be a Christian. Let's let him be a Christian. They start to rub their nose again. What are we going to do with Tuan, you know? And I'm just waiting this thing out. And finally, one guy says, Tuan, does your God see in the dark? I said, yes, he does. And that was the first realization that they had that God knew everything and could see in the dark. And most sin is carried on in the dark. And they realized that God could see in the dark. And that really worked for us. They start to understand God. And another guy says, God, Tuan, your God's big, isn't he? I said, oh, yes, he's big. He controls the rain. He controls whether your wife gets pregnant. He controls whether you fish, whether you catch fish, whether you shoot pigs. He controls whether your child gets sick. Everything. You can't even breathe without God's help. You'd die if it wasn't for God's sustaining power in your life. Oh, God is big. He said, I'm not going to steal pineapples anymore. And about half of the crowd quit stealing because they're afraid of God. And you know, when you have a fear of God, that's when they got converted. The other half still stole all the pineapples, so I still wasn't getting any. But they brought them to my store and I bought them from them. And no, that isn't in a pineapple story book because Bill didn't want to put in there, you know, he didn't want to propagate buying stolen goods. And you can understand that. And he was right. But, I thought, well, God's given them to them, so maybe I can buy them. But the strangest thing happened now. I outed a group of people that weren't stealing anymore. And they came to me and they said, we're not stealing anymore, Tuan. Your God's too big. I said, good for you. I said, now you ought to be a Christian. And I was starting to win a church. And these people became converted. And I started training these preacher boys. And one morning, they woke me up early and they said, Tuan, come out here. And I came out and I said, what's this? And they had all these pineapples laid on the front porch. And they said, Tuan, take them in the house. It's not right for our people to steal your pineapples. Take them in the house. I said, what do you mean by this? They said, Tuan, we can't watch them anymore. We're going to the jungle for a while. And so I said, what do you mean? You know what they've been doing? The preacher boys had taken turns watching the pineapples at night. Snakes, mosquitoes, and everything. While I was sleeping, and I didn't know it, without pay, they're guarding the pineapples because it wasn't right that their people would steal my pineapples. I couldn't believe this. God sure can take good care of his property, can't he? And he delivers them to him. I said, look, they're God's, they're not mine. And I gave each man his portion and took a portion myself. And we all thanked the Lord together. And I was amazed. I said, God, you deliver them to my front door. I don't even walk in the garden anymore. I don't even know if they're growing. If the garden needed weeded, I first thought, well, if God owns the garden, he can weed his own garden, right? And, you know, that's not the way you do it. Friends, I become the manager. I'm the steward. He owns it. I'm working for him. If the garden needs weeded, I send him in to weed it, you see. And, oh, God did marvelous. You know what happened to the thieves? They kept stealing. Well, once it went this way with the pineapples, I gave my banana trees to God too. Oh, friends, the way God can grow bananas. We had to prop up the trees. The bunches were so big. It's a soft-stemmed tree, and they would fall over. And the papaya and the coconuts, and we gave the whole thing to God. And it really, we were exporting fruit now. The MAF plane would come and we'd load it up and I'd send it to other missionaries. And they'd say, where'd you get this beautiful fruit? How is it that you got assigned to the paradise of the South Coast? You know, I mean, the Garden of Eden. What did you do to deserve this? It wasn't a paradise until I gave my fruit trees to God and everything. And they say, how do you keep your people from stealing them? And I could share with them, give your possessions to God. God takes good care of his property. And I could share with them this whole principle of yielding your rights and surrendering your rights. But friends, an amazing thing happened at this point. The thieves were still stealing them. And the preacher boys caught on. Inevitably, when somebody stole, something would happen in his house. Somebody would get sick, house would burn, his chickens would die, something would happen. God would have the pressure on him. And the preacher boy said, have you been stealing the 2-ounce fruit? And they'd say, yeah. He'd say, oh, that's why. His God's on you. He's big. And they'd walk. And all these thieves started to get afraid every time it happened. You know what we found on the front porch? We found bananas and pineapples and stuff brought back overnight. The curse had gone on. The pressure was on. And they brought it back hoping that it would be lifted. You see? And now we're finding everything. Everything they ever stole from us, we found on our front porch. That's how God got it back to us. You see? And it was unreal. And friends, the pressure was on to the place where they didn't want to steal anymore. They're afraid. And they said, oh. And you know, I didn't know what to do. I couldn't even get guys to weed the garden anymore. They didn't want to get in God's garden unless they die, you see. And now I'm going on vacation. I had to be away 3 weeks. And I said, now look, when I'm gone, take the fruit. Use it. It's yours. I can't eat it. I turn it over to you. As long as I'm gone, it's all yours to take. Don't let it rot on the trees. Don't let it fall off the trees. I'd come back 3 weeks later and the fruit was rotting under the trees. And it was rotting on the trees. I said, why didn't your people eat it? You need it so much. Ah, Tuhan. You saying it is one thing, but your God, he's something else. He's big. You see? And I couldn't believe it. Now I couldn't get rid of it. Hey, let God have control of your things. You'll never lack. I was exporting it. If the planes didn't come, I'd carry it to the village here, eat these bananas. Some guys wouldn't even eat them till I took a bite first, and then they'd eat the rest of it. But this kind of thing, I couldn't believe it. God sure can take good care of his property. And you know,
you'll be blessed by this presentation today. I know that there's a pineapple field in every one of our lives. And I challenge you to turn it over to God. We fight on and we aggravate ourselves. And look at Conan, what happened to him. But we can turn that around in our lives and live healthier, stress-free lives if we just let God help us. Amen? Amen. Let us bow our heads. Heavenly Father, it's been good to be here today with you. We have witnessed some real lessons in life. May we be able to apply them and be winners. Bless our pastor. Bring him back safely is our prayer. Amen.